Potter, who knew all about the peculiarities of the visitor's room, and in the cemetery, the gravedigger, who knew all about the singularities of the sepulchre. Accordingly, when it came to the nuns, he was doubly informed about their lives on the one hand, and on the other, about their deaths. But he did not abuse this knowledge in any way. The congregation thought a lot of him. Old, lame, blind as a bat, probably a bit deaf. So many good qualities. He'd have been hard to replace. So, with the assurance of a man who feels himself to be appreciated, the dear old man stood before the Reverend Prioress and launched into a bucolic address that was fairly rambling and extremely deep. He went on at length about his age, his infirmities, the weight of the years now bearing down on him, the growing demands of his work, the size of the garden, nights to be spent, like last night, for instance, when he had had to put straw mats over the melon beds because of the moon. And he finished off by saying that he had a brother. The prioress gave a start. A brother who was not young. Second start of the prioress, but a reassured start. That if they liked, this brother could come and move in with him and help him. That he was an excellent gardener, that the community would get good work out of him, much more than he himself could give. And that otherwise, if his brother was not accepted, as he, the eldest, felt himself to be broken down and no longer up to the job, he would be obliged, with much regret, to pack up and go. And that his brother had a little girl he would bring with him, who would be raised in God here in the house, and who might, who knows, one day make a nun. When he had finished speaking, the prioress interrupted the slipping of her rosary beads through her fingers and said to him, "Can you, between now and this evening, get hold of a strong iron bar?"
"What for?"
"To be used as a lever."
"Yes, Reverend Mother," answered Fauchelevent.
The prioress got up without saying another word and walked into the neighboring room, which was the chapter hall where the vocal mothers were probably assembled. Fauchelevent was left to his own devices. Mother Innocent. About a quarter of an hour elapsed. The prioress came back and resumed her seat. Both parties seemed preoccupied. We have copied down the exchange between them as best we could.
Father Fauvent?
Reverend Mother?
You are familiar with the chapel?
I've got a little box there to hear Mass and the offices in.
And you've gone into the choir for your work?
2 or 3 times.
There's a stone there that has to be lifted up.
Heavy?
The flagstone from the pavement next to the altar.
The stone over the burial chamber?
Yes.
This is one time when it'd be good to have 2 men.
Mother Ascension is as strong as a man. She'll help you.
A woman is never a man.
We only have a woman to help you. Everyone does what they can. Because Dom Mabillon gives 417 epistles of St. Bernard, and Merlonus Horstius gives only 367, I do not look down on Merlonus Horstius.
Me neither.
Merit consists in working according to your strength. A cloister is not a building site.
And a woman is not a man. My brother's the strong one.
And then you'll have a lever.
That's the only sort of key that fits that sort of door.
There is a ring in the stone.
I'll put the lever through it.
And the stone is set up to pivot.
That's good, Reverend Mother. I'll open up the vault.
And the 4 cantor mothers will assist you.
And when the vault is open?
It will have to be shut again.
Will that be all?
No.
Give me your orders, Most Reverend Mother.
Fauvent, we have confidence in you.
I'm here to take care of everything.
And to keep quiet about everything.
Yes, Reverend Mother.
When the vault is open,
I'll shut it again.
But before that,
what? Reverend Mother.
Something has to be lowered into it.
There was a pause. The prioress
thrust out her lower lip in a pout that looked like hesitation, then broke the silence.
Father Fauvent?
Reverend Mother?
You know that a mother died this morning?
No.
Didn't you hear the bell, then?
You can't hear a thing down at the bottom of the garden.
Really?
I can hardly make out my own ring.
She died at daybreak.
And then this morning the wind wasn't blowing my way.
It was Mother Crucifixion, one of the blessed.
The prioress stopped talking, moved her lips for a moment as though mouthing a mental sermon, and resumed.
3 years ago, a Jansenist, Madame de Bethune, only had to see Mother Crucifixion praying, and she turned Orthodox.
Ah, yes. I can hear the knell now, Reverend Mother.
The mothers have carried her to the room of the dead that opens into the church.
I know.
No man other than you can or should enter that room. You make sure of that. That would be a pretty sight, to see a man go into the room of the dead.
More often.
What?
More often.
What do you say?
I say more often.
More often what?
Reverend Mother, I don't say more often what, I say more often.
I don't understand you. Why do you say more often?
To say what you say, Reverend Mother.
But I didn't say more often.
You didn't say it, but I said it, to say what you say.
Just then the clock struck 9.
At 9 o'clock in the morning, and at any hour, praised and adored be the most blessed sacrament of the altar, said the prioress.
Amen,
said Fauchelevent.
The hour had sounded in the nick of time. It cut short that more often. Without it, it is likely that the prioress and Fauchelevent would never have got out of this tangle.
Fauchelevent wiped his forehead. The prioress gave another little interior murmur, probably holy, then spoke up. While she was alive, Mother Crucifixion made conversions. After her death, she will make miracles.
She will, at that,
replied Fauchelevent, following her lead and making an effort to stick with it from now on.
Father Fauvent, the community has been blessed in Mother Crucifixion. No doubt it is not given to everyone to die like Cardinal de Bérulle, saying the Holy Mass and exhaling his soul toward God, uttering these words, Hanc igitur oblationem. But without attaining such happiness, Mother Crucifixion had a most beautiful death. She was conscious right up until the last. She talked to us, then she talked to the angels. She gave us her last commands. If you had a bit more faith, and if you had been able to be in her cell, she would have cured your leg for you just by touching it. She was smiling. You could feel that she was being born again in God. There was a touch of paradise in that death.
Fauchelevent felt that this was a sermon gearing up.
Amen,
he said. Father Fauvent, we must do what the dead want us to do.
The prioress counted a few beads on her rosary. Fauchelevent kept quiet. She went on.
I have consulted on this question several ecclesiastics working in Our Lord who are engaged in the exercise of the clerical life and who have produced wonderful fruit.
Reverend Mother, you can hear the knell much better from here than in the garden.
Besides, she is more than a dead woman. She is a saint.
Like you, Reverend Mother.
She slept in her coffin for 20 years, with the express permission of our Holy Father Pius VII.
The one who crowned the Bonaparte.
For a clever man like Fauchelevent, the memory was untoward. Luckily, the prioress was lost in thought and did not hear him. She continued.
Father Fauvent?
Reverend Mother?
Saint Diodorus, Archbishop of Cappadocia, wanted this single word to be written on his tomb, Acarus, which means earthworm. This was done. Is that not true?
Yes, Reverend Mother.
The blessed Mezzocane, Abbe of Aquila, wanted to be buried beneath the gallows. That was done.
That is true.
St. Terence, Bishop of Ostia, where the Tiber meets the sea, asked that his tombstone be engraved with the sign that used to be put on the graves of parricides, in the hope that passers-by would spit on his grave. That was done. We must obey the dead.
So be it.
The body of Bernard Guidonis, born in France near Roche-Abeille, was, as he had ordered, and in spite of the King of Castile, carried into the church of the Dominicans of Limoges, although Bernard Guidonis was Bishop of Tuy in Spain. Can this be denied?
No, it cannot, Reverend Mother.
The fact is testified to by Pontovit de la Fosse. A few more rosary beads were silently said. The prioress went on. Father Fauvent, Mother Crucifixion will be buried in the coffin in which she slept for 20 years.
That is only right.
Death is merely a prolongation of sleep.
So I'll have to nail her in that particular coffin?
Yes.
And we'll set aside the undertaker's coffin.
Exactly.
I am at the orders of the most reverend community.
The 4 Cantor Mothers will help you.
To nail the coffin? I don't need them.
No. To lower it down.
Where?
Into the vault.
What vault?
Under the altar. Fauchelevent gave a start.
The vault under the altar?
Under the altar.
Yes, but...
You'll lever up the stone with that bar using the ring.
But
we must obey the dead. To be buried in the vault, under the altar of the chapel, not to go into profane ground, to remain in death where she had prayed in life. This was Mother Crucifixion's last wish. She asked us, that is. She ordered us.
But it is forbidden.
Forbidden by men. Ordered by God.
If word got out?
We have confidence in you.
Oh, as for me, I'm a stone in your wall.
The chapter has assembled. The vocal mothers whom I have just consulted again, and who are deliberating as we speak, have decided that Mother Crucifixion will be buried in her coffin under our altar, according to her wish. You'll see if there won't be miracles galore here, Father Fauvent. What glory in God for the community! Miracles spring from graves.
But, Reverend Mother, if the officer from the health department,
Saint Benedict II, on the question of burial, resisted Constantine Pogonatus.
Yet the police commissioner,
Chonod de Mer, one of the 7 German kings who joined the Gauls in the reign of Constantius, expressly recognized the right of the religious to be buried in religion, that is, under the altar.
But the inspector from the prefecture...
The world is nothing in the face of the cross. Martin, 11th general of the Carthusians, gave his order, his motto, Stat crux, dum volvitur orbis.
Amen,
said Fauchelevent, who stuck imperturbably to this way of extricating himself whenever he heard Latin. The most mediocre listener will do for someone who has been silent far too long. The day the rhetorician Gymnasterus got out of jail, having held inside so many dilemmas and syllogisms, he stopped at the first tree he came to and harangued it, making great efforts to win it over. The prioress, usually dammed up by silence, and now having a surplus in her reservoir, stood and shouted with the loquacity of an opened sluice gate.
On my right I have Benedict, and on my left, Bernard. Who is Bernard? He is the first abbe of Clairvaux. Fontaine in Burgundy is blessed for having been the place of his birth. His father's name was Tessalin, and his mother's Alette. He began at Citeaux, only to end up at Clairvaux. He was ordained an abbe by the Bishop of Chalon-sur-Saône, Guillaume de Champeau. He had 700 novices and founded 160 monasteries. He brought down Abelard at the Council of Saint in 1140, and Pierre de Bruys and Henry his disciple, and another lot of strays known as the Apostolicals. He confounded Arnaud de Bresse dumbfounded the monk Raoul, the Jew-slayer, took over the Council of Reims in 1148, had Gilbert de la Porée, Bishop of Poitiers, condemned, had Ayon de l'Étoile condemned, sorted out the disputes between the princes, enlightened King Louis the Young, counseled Pope Eugenius III, regulated the temple, preached the crusade, performed 250 miracles in his lifetime, and up to 39 in one day. Who is Benedict? He is the Patriarch of Monte Cassino. He is the second founder of claustral holiness. He is the Basil of the West. His order has produced 40 popes, 200 cardinals, 50 patriarchs, 1,600 archbishops, 4,600 bishops, 4 emperors, 12 empresses, 46 kings, 41 queens, and 3,600 canonized saints, and has existed for 1,400 years. On one side, St. Bernard, on the other, the health inspector. On one side, St. Benedict, on the other inspector from the Department of Roads. The government, the Department of Roads, the funeral parlor, the regulations, the administration, what do we know of all that? No one worries about how we are treated. We don't even have the right to give our dust to Jesus Christ. Your sanitation is an invention of the revolution. God subordinated to the police commissioner. That's the age we live in. Silence, Fauvent.
Fauchelevent was not terribly comfortable under this barrage. The prioress continued.
No one questions the right of a monastery to bury their dead themselves. Only fanatics and lunatics deny it. We are living in times of terrible confusion. People don't know what they should know, and know things they should not. People are crass and ungodly. These days there are those who can't distinguish between the mighty Saint Bernard and the Bernard known as of the Catholic poor, a certain good-hearted ecclesiastic who lived in the 13th century. Others blaspheme as far as to compare the scaffold of Louis XVI to the cross of Jesus Christ. Louis XVI was a mere king. Let us then watch out for God. There is no just or unjust anymore. Everyone knows Voltaire's name, and no one knows the name of César de Bus. And yet César de Bus is one of the blessed, and Voltaire is a sorry soul. The last archbishop, the Cardinal de Perigord, did not even know that Charles de Condrin succeeded Bérulle and François Bourgoin, Condrin, and Jean-François Senot, Bourgoin, and the father of St. Martha, Jean-François Senot. People know the name of Father Coton, not because he was one of the three who pushed for the foundation of the oratory, but because the Huguenot king, Henri IV, swore at him. What makes St. François de Sales popular with worldly types is that he cheated at cards. And then they attack religion. Why? Because there have been bad priests, because Sagittarius, Bishop of Gap, was a brother of Salon, Bishop of Embrun, and both were followers of Mamol. What does that matter? Does it stop Martin of Tours from being a saint and from having given half the coat off his back to a pauper? They persecute the saints. They shut their eyes to the truth. They are used to getting around in the dark. The wildest beasts are blind beasts. No one takes hell seriously anymore. Oh, the wicked people! In the name of the king now means in the name of the revolution. No one knows any more what they owe either to the living or to the dead. Dying a holy death is now forbidden. Burial is a civil affair. It is horrifying. Saint Leo II wrote 2 letters expressly, one to Pierre Notaire, the other to the king of the Visigoths, opposing and rejecting, in matters touching on the dead, the authority of the exarch and the supremacy of the emperor. Gautier, Bishop of Chalons, stood up to Autant, Duc de Bourgogne, on the matter. The former bench agreed on it. Once, we even voted in the chapter on worldly concerns. The Abbé of Citeaux, general of the order, was hereditary counselor to the Parliament of Burgundy. We do what we like with our dead. Is the body of Saint Benedict himself not in France, in the Abbey of Fleury, known as Saint-Benoît-sur-Loire, even though he died in Italy, at Monte Cassino, one Saturday, on the 21st day of the month of March, in the year 543? All this is incontestable. I abhor the solence. I hate the priors. I loathe heretics. But I would detest even more anyone who tried to contradict what I say. You only have to read Arnoux Villon, Gabriel Busselin, Tritemius, Maurolicus, or Dom Luc d'Achery.
The prioress took a breath, then turned to Fauchelevent. Father Fauvent,
Is it agreed?
It is agreed, Reverend Mother.
Can we count on you?
I will obey.
Good.
I am completely devoted to the convent.
Enough said. You will close the coffin. The sisters will carry it into the chapel. They will say the funeral service. Then they will go back to the cloister. Between 11 o'clock and midnight, you will come with your iron bar. It will all be done in the greatest secrecy. There will be only the 4 Cantor Mothers, Mother Ascension, and you in the chapel.
And the sister at the post?
She will not turn round.
But she'll hear.
She will not listen. Besides, what the cloister knows, the world knows nothing about.
There was another pause. The prioress went on.
You will take off your bell. There is no point in letting the sister at the post know you're there.
Reverend Mother?
What, Father Fauvent?
Has the doctor of the dead been?
He's coming at 4 o'clock today. We rang the bell that calls the doctor of the dead. So you really don't hear any of the bells?
I only take notice of my own.
A good thing, Father Fauvent.
Reverend Mother, the lever'll need to be at least 6 feet long.
Where will you get it?
Where there's no shortage of iron gates, there's no shortage of iron bars. I've got my scrap heap at the bottom of the garden.
About 3/4 of an hour before midnight. Don't forget.
Reverend Mother?
What?
If ever you have other work like this, my brother's the one who's strong. A real Turk.
You will do it as quickly as possible.
I can't go all that fast. I'm none too steady on my pins. That's why I need help. I limp.
There's nothing wrong with limping. It may even be a blessing. The Emperor Henri II, who fought the antipope Gregory and re-established Benedict VIII, has 2 nicknames, the Saint and the Limper.
It's a good thing to have 2 surnames, mumbled Fauchelevent,
who was, in fact, a little hard of hearing. Father Fauvent, now I think about it, let's take a whole hour. Be at the high altar with your iron bar at 11 o'clock. The service begins at midnight. Everything has to be over a good 1/4 of an hour beforehand.
I'll do all I can to prove my zeal to the community. This is what we've agreed. I'll nail up the coffin. At 11 o'clock sharp, I'll be in the chapel. The Cantor Mothers will be there. Mother Ascension will be there. 2 of me would be better, but never mind. I'll have my lever. We'll open the vault. We'll drop the coffin into it, and we'll seal the vault up again. After which, there won't even be a trace. The government won't suspect a thing. Reverend Mother, does that about cover it?
No.
What else is there?
There's still the empty coffin.
This gave them pause for thought. Fauchelevent pondered. The prioress pondered.
Father Fauvent, what will we do with the empty coffin?
We'll put it in the ground.
Empty?
Another silence. Fauchelevent made the sort of gesture with his left hand that puts to rest any disturbing question.
Reverend Mother, I'll nail the empty coffin in the back room of the church. No one else but me can get in, and I'll cover the coffin with the pall.
Yes, but when the pallbearers put it in the hearse, and when they lower it in the ground, they will certainly feel there's nothing in it.
Ah, crap!
Cried Fauchelevent. The prioress began to make the sign of the cross, and stared hard at the gardener, the st stuck in his throat. He swiftly sought to come up with an expedient to make her forget his bout of blasphemy.
Reverend Mother, I'll put some dirt in the coffin. Then it will seem like there's a person.
You're right. Dirt is the same thing as man. So you'll fix up the empty coffin?
I'll make it my business.
The prioress's face, till then worried and dark, became once more serene. She waved him away, a superior dismissing an inferior. Fauchelevent headed for the door. As he was about to step out,
The prioress gently raised her voice. Father Fauvent, I am happy with you. Tomorrow, after the funeral, bring your brother to me, and tell him to bring his daughter.
In which Jean Valjean looks as though he has read Austin Castillejo. The strides of the lame are like the winks of the one-eyed. They don't go straight to the point. Moreover, Fauchelevent was puzzled. It took him nearly a quarter of an hour to get back to the garden shed. Cosette was awake. Jean Valjean had sat her next to the fire. As Fauchelevent came in the door, Jean Valjean was showing her the gardener's basket hanging on the wall. He told her, "Listen carefully, my little Cosette. We have to leave this house and go away, but we'll be back, and we'll be as happy as can be here. This good man here will carry you on his back in that. You'll wait for me at a lady's place. I'll come and get you there. Above all, if you don't want Mother Thénardier to take you away again, do what you're told, and don't say a thing." Cosette nodded, looking grave. At the sound of Fauchelevent pushing the door, Jean Valjean whipped round.
"Well, everything's arranged, and nothing is," said Fauchelevent. "I've got permission to bring you in, but before I can bring you in, I've got to get you out. That's where we come unstuck. For the little one, it's as easy as pie."
"You'll carry her out?"
"Will she keep quiet?"
"I can vouch for that."
"But what about you, Father Madeleine?"
After a silence that was a trifle anxious, Fauchelevent went on to exclaim,
"I know! You go out the way you came in."
Jean Valjean answered the same way he did the first time. "Not possible." Fauchelevent, talking more to himself than to Jean Valjean, grumbled,
"There's something else that's tormenting me. I said I'd put some dirt in it. Trouble is, I don't think dirt instead of a body inside is going to do the trick. It won't work. It'll move around. It'll shake. The men will fear it. You see, Father Madeleine, the government will be on to it."
Jean Valjean looked him in the eye and decided he was delirious. Fauchelevent went on,
"How in Christmas are you going to get out of here? Because everything has to be done tomorrow. It's tomorrow that I'll be bringing you in. The prioress is expecting you."
Then he explained to Jean Valjean that it was payment for a service that he, Fauchelevent, was doing for the community, that it was one of his duties to take part in burials, to nail coffins, and assist the gravedigger at the cemetery, that the nun who had died that morning had asked to be buried in the coffin that served her as a bed and to be interred in the vault under the chapel altar, that this was prohibited by police regulations, but that she was one of those dead women who always get their way, that the prioress and the vocal mothers meant to carry out the deceased's wishes, that it was too bad for the government, that he, Fauchelevent, would nail the coffin in the cell, lift up the stone in the chapel, and lower the dead woman into the vault, and that, to thank him, the prioress would admit his brother into the house as a gardener and his niece as a boarder, that this brother of his was Monsieur Madeleine and his niece, Cosette, that the prioress had told him to bring his brother along tomorrow evening after the sham burial in the cemetery, but that he couldn't bring Monsieur Madeleine in from outside if Monsieur Madeleine was not outside. That was the first hitch. And after that there was another hitch, the empty coffin.
"What is this empty coffin?"
Jean Valjean asked. Fauchelevent replied,
"The coffin from the administration."
"What coffin? What administration?"
"A nun dies. The municipal doctor comes along and says there is a dead nun. The government sends in a coffin. The next day it sends a hearse and undertakers to pick up the coffin and take it to the cemetery. The undertakers will come and lift up the coffin, and there won't be anything in it."
"Put something in it."
"A dead body? I don't have one."
"No."
"What then?"
"A live body."
"What live body?"
"Me," said Jean Valjean. Fauchelevent, who had sat down, shot up as though a firecracker had gone off under his chair.
"You!"
"Why not?" Jean Valjean gave one of those rare smiles that came over him like a ray of sunshine in a winter sky. "You know, Fauchelevent, how you said Mother Crucifixion is dead, and I added, and Father Madeleine is buried? Well, that's how it's going to be."
"Ah, right, you're having a laugh. You're not serious."
"I'm perfectly serious. Don't I have to get out of here?"
"Of course."
"I told you to get a basket and a lid for me as well."
"Well,
The basket will be made of pine, and the lid will be a black sheet. To start with, it's a white sheet. Nuns are buried in white. A white sheet, then.
You're not like other men, Father Madeleine.
To see such imagination at work, devising schemes that are nothing more than the wild and reckless inventions of the galleys, to surface from his peaceful surroundings and get mixed up in what he called the quiet chugging along of the convent, was as amazing to Fauchelevent as it would be to a person out walking if he saw a seagull fishing in the gutter of the Rue Saint-Denis. Jean Valjean went on.
The question is how to get out of here without being seen. This is one way to do it. But first, give me the full picture. What happens? Where is this coffin?
The one that's empty?
Yes.
Down in what they call the room of the dead. It's on two trestles under a pall.
How long is the coffin?
6 feet.
What is this room of the dead?
It's a room on the ground floor that has a grated window looking on the garden, which is shut from outside with a shutter, and two doors, one going to the convent, the other going to the church.
What church?
The church on the street, the church for everyone.
Do you have the keys to these two doors?
No, I have the key to the convent door. The concierge has the key to the church door.
When does the concierge open that door?
Only to let the undertakers in when they come for the coffin. Once the coffin's out, the door is shut again.
Who puts the nails in the coffin?
I do.
Who puts the cloth over it?
I do.
Are you alone?
No other man apart from the police doctor can go into the room of the dead. It's even written on the wall.
Could you tonight, when everyone in the convent is asleep, hide me in that room?
No. But I can hide you in a little dark cubbyhole that opens into the room of the dead, where I put my burial tools and which I look after and have the key for.
What time will the hearse come to pick up the coffin tomorrow?
Around 3 in the afternoon. The burial takes place at the Vaugirard Cemetery just before nightfall. It's quite a way away.
I'll stay hidden in your tool shed all night and all morning. What about food? I'll be hungry.
I'll bring you something.
You can come and nail me into the coffin at 2 o'clock. Fauchelevent took a step back and cracked his knuckles.
But I can't do that.
Bah, just grab a hammer and hammer the nails in a floorboard. What struck Fauchelevent as unbelievable was, we repeat, simple for Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean had been in direr straits than this. Anyone who has ever been a prisoner knows the art of shrinking to fit the size of the escape hatch. The prisoner is prone to flight the same way a sick person is prone to the crisis that cures or kills him. An escape is a cure. What won't we do to be cured? To have yourself nailed in and carted away in a box like a parcel, to live in a box for some little time, to find air where there is none, to cut down your breathing for hours on end, to know how to suffocate without dying. This was one of the dark talents of Jean Valjean. In any case, a coffin in which there is a living being, this expedient of the convict, is also the expedient of the emperor. If the monk Austin Castillejo is to be believed, this was the means Charles V, wanting to see the woman known as La Plombe again one last time after his abdication, employed to get her into the monastery of Saint-Just and get her out again. Fauchelevent, recovering a little, cried,
"But how will you manage to breathe?"
"I'll breathe."
"In that box. I'm suffocating just thinking about it."
"Surely you must have a gimlet. You can put a few small holes here and there around the mouth, and you can nail it without making the lid too tight."
"Right. And what if you should cough or sneeze?"
"An escapee never coughs or sneezes." And Jean Valjean added, "Father Fauchelevent, I have to decide. Either get caught here, or take my chances going out in the hearse." Everyone knows how cats like to stop and dawdle wherever a door is half open. Who has not said to a cat, "Well, come in, then"? There are men who, when faced with an opportunity cracking open in front of them, also have a tendency to waver between two different solutions, at the risk of being crushed by fate's suddenly closing the door again. The overly cautious, thorough cats that they are, and because they are cats, sometimes take more risks than the bold. Fauchelevent was of such a hesitant character.
yet Jean Valjean's coolness won him over in spite of himself. He grumbled,
"Indeed, there is no other way."
Jean Valjean went on, "The only thing that worries me is what happens in the cemetery."
"That is just what doesn't bother me," cried Fauchelevent. "If you're sure you can get out of the coffin, I'm sure I can get you out of the grave. The gravedigger's a drunk, and a friend of mine, name of Father Metien. A good old stick, one of the old school. The gravedigger puts the dead in the grave, and I put the gravedigger in my pocket. I'll tell you what will happen. We'll arrive a bit before sundown, 3/4 of an hour before they shut the gates of the cemetery. The hearse will drive right up to the grave. I'll follow behind it. That's my job. I'll have a hammer, a chisel, and some pliers in my pocket. The hearse stops. The undertakers tie a rope around your coffin for you and lower you down. The priest says the prayers, makes the sign of the cross, chucks some holy water in, and clears off. I remain alone with Father Metien. He's my friend, like I told you. Either he'll be plastered or he won't be plastered. It's all the same. If he's not plastered, I say to him, 'Come and have a drink while the Bon Coin is still open.' I drag him away, I get him drunk. It doesn't take long to get Father Metien drunk. He's always halfway there. I drink him under the table for you. I take his pass to get back into the cemetery, and I come back without him. Then you'll only have me to deal with. If he's plastered, I say to him, 'Off you go. I'll stand in for you.' Off he goes, and I pull you out of the hole."
Jean Valjean put out his hand, and Fauchelevent fell on it with touching, peasant-style emotion.
"Agreed, Father Fauchelevent. It will all be all right. Provided nothing goes wrong," thought Fauchelevent. "But if it all goes horribly wrong?"
It's not enough to be a drunk, to be immortal. The next day, as the sun was going down, the people going up and down the Boulevard du Maine took their hats off as an old model hearse went by, decorated with death's heads, crossbones, and teardrops. Inside the hearse was a coffin covered with a white sheet on which a huge black cross spread out like a great dead woman with her arms hanging out. A draped coach in which a priest in a surplice and a choir boy in a red skullcap could be seen followed behind. Two undertakers in grey uniforms with black trim were walking to the left and right of the hearse. Bringing up the rear came an old man in the clothes of a labourer, limping. This cortege was heading for the Vaugirard cemetery. You could see, sticking out of the old man's pocket, the handle of a hammer, the blade of a cold chisel, and the double handle of a pair of pliers. Vaugirard cemetery was an exception among the cemeteries of Paris. It had its own peculiar customs, just as it had its porte cochere and its double gate that the old people in the quartier, holding fast to the old words, called the bridal gate and the pedestrian gate. The Bernardine Benedictines of Petit Picpus had obtained, as we have said, the right to be buried apart in a corner and at night, this ground having once belonged to their community. The gravediggers accordingly had to work in the evening in summer and at night in winter, and were kept to a peculiar discipline. In those days the gates of the cemeteries of Paris were shut at sunset, and since this was a regulation made by the municipality, Vaugirard Cemetery was subject to it like the rest. The bridal gate and the pedestrian gate were two iron gates standing side by side next to a gatehouse built by the architect Peyronet, where the cemetery gatekeeper lived. These gates thus turned inexorably on their hinges the instant the sun disappeared behind the dome of the Invalides. If any gravedigger was caught lagging behind at that moment, his only resort for getting out was his gravedigger's pass, provided by the administration of the funeral parlor. A kind of letter box had been cut into the shutter of the gatekeeper's window. The gravedigger dropped his pass into this box, the gatekeeper heard it fall, pulled the cord, and the pedestrian gate opened. If the gravedigger did not have his pass, he called out his name, and the gatekeeper, who was sometimes in bed asleep, would get up, go to identify the gravedigger, and open the gate with his key. The gravedigger would then go out, after paying a 15-franc fine. This cemetery, with its novel practices outside the general run of things, disturbed the symmetry of the administration. It was closed down soon after 1830,
Montparnasse Cemetery, known as the East Cemetery, has taken over from it, inheriting the famous watering hole bordering the Vaugirard Cemetery that used to have a wooden signboard over it with a quince painted on it. It had an L-shaped bar with the tables of drinkers on one side and the graves on the other. And this sign, Au Bon Coin, at the Good Quince. Vaugirard Cemetery was what we might describe as a cemetery that had lost its bloom. It was falling into decay. Mold was invading it, the flowers were departing. Well-heeled bourgeois didn't think much of being buried in Vaugirard. It reeked of poverty. Père Lachaise, and don't spare the horses. To be buried at Père Lachaise was like having mahogany furniture. It was a sign of elegance for all to see. Vaugirard Cemetery was a venerable paddock, planted in the style of an old French garden, straight paths, box hedges, cedars, holly, old graves under old yews, very tall grass. Night there was dramatic. There were some very lugubrious shapes and shadows there. The sun had not yet set when the hearse with the white sheet and the black cross turned into the avenue that led to the Vaugirard Cemetery. The lame old man who was following it was, of course, none other than Fauchelevent. The burial of Mother Crucifixion in the vault under the altar, the removal of Cosette, the smuggling of Jean Valjean into the room of the dead, all had gone smoothly and without a snag. We might note in passing that the inhumation of Mother Crucifixion under the convent altar is a perfectly venial sin to our way of thinking. It is one of those sins that look very much like a duty. The nuns had carried it off not only without any qualms, but to the applause of their consciences. In the cloister, what is known as the government is merely an interference with their authority, an interference that was always questionable. The rule comes first. As for the civil code, we'll see. Men, you can make as many laws as you like, but keep them to yourselves. Caesar's toll is never anything more than what is left over from God's toll. A prince is nothing next to a principal. Fauchelevent limped along behind the hearse, happy as can be. His two mysteries, his two twin plots, one in league with the nuns, the other with Monsieur Madeleine, one for the convent, the other against, had succeeded together, one after the other. Jean Valjean's calmness was one of those powerful tranquilizers that are contagious. Fauchelevent was no longer worried about whether they would bring it off. What remained to be done was nothing. For the past 2 years he had got the gravedigger, good old Father Metienne, drunk a dozen times. He could do what he liked with him. The man was putty in his hands. Metienne's head changed shape to fit Fauchelevent's cap. Fauchelevent felt completely secure. As the convoy entered the avenue leading to the cemetery, Fauchelevent looked at the hearse, happy, and rubbed his big hands together, muttering to himself, "Not a bad joke." Suddenly the hearse stopped. They had reached the gate. The burial permit had to be shown. The man from the funeral parlor went and had a word with the cemetery gatekeeper. During this conversation, which always involves a wait of 1 or 2 minutes, someone, a stranger, came and stood behind the hearse, next to Fauchelevent. He was some sort of laborer in a jacket with big pockets and a pick under his arm. Fauchelevent looked at the stranger.
"Who are you?"
he asked. The man replied, "The gravedigger." If you'd survived a cannon blast full in the chest, you'd look like Fauchelevent.
"The gravedigger?"
"Yep."
"You?"
"Me."
"Father Metienne is the gravedigger."
"Was."
"What do you mean, was?"
"He's dead." Fauchelevent had been ready for anything except that, that a gravedigger could die. And yet it is true, gravediggers themselves die. By dint of digging the graves of others, they open up their own. Fauchelevent remained speechless. He barely had the strength to stammer.
"But he can't be."
"He is."
"But," he repeated feebly, "Father Metienne is the gravedigger."
"After Napoleon, Louis XVIII. After Metienne, Gribier. Peasant, my name is Gribier." Fauchelevent, white as a sheet, studied this
Gribier. He was a long, skinny, pallid man, perfectly dismal. He looked like a doctor who had missed his calling and turned to grave-digging.
Fauchelevent burst out laughing.
"Ah, it's funny, the things that happen. Father Machen is dead. Little Father Machen is dead, but long live little Father Lenoir. You know what little Father Lenoir is? It's the small jug of red at 6 a shot. It's the jug of Suresnes, for heaven's sake. Real Paris Suresnes. Ah, old Machen's dead, eh? I'm sorry to hear that. He was a real bon vivant, but you're a bon vivant too. Isn't that right, friend? We'll go and have a drink together in a sec."
The man replied, "I've been to school. I've done 3rd year. I never drink."
The hearse had started off again and was rolling along down the main path of the cemetery. Fauchelevent had slackened his pace. He was limping even more from anxiety than infirmity. The gravedigger was walking ahead of him. Fauchelevent was giving the unexpected Gribier the once-over again. He was one of those men who look old when they're still young, and who are skinny but very strong.
"Hey, friend," cried Fauchelevent.
The man turned round.
"I'm the gravedigger from the convent."
"My colleague," said the man. Fauchelevent was illiterate but sharp as a tack, and he knew right away that he was dealing with a formidable species, a smooth talker. He grumbled,
"So Father Machen died just like that?"
The man replied, "Exactly. The good Lord consulted his book of due dates. It was Father Machen's turn, so Father Machen died." Fauchelevent repeated mechanically,
"The good Lord."
"The good Lord," said the man with authority. "For the philosophers, the eternal Father. For the Jacobins, the supreme being."
"Aren't we going to get to know each other?"
stammered Fauchelevent. "We already do. You're a peasant, I'm a Parisian."
"We don't know each other until we've drunk together. The man who empties his glass empties his heart. You'll come and have a drink with me. You can't refuse.
The job comes first."
Fauchelevent thought, "I'm finished. We were only a few turns of the wheel from the little path that leads to the nun's corner."
The gravedigger went on. "Peasant, I've got 7 little nippers to feed. Since they have to eat, I can't drink." And he added with the satisfaction of a serious soul pontificating, "Their hunger is the enemy of my thirst." The hearse turned past a stand of cypresses, left the main path, took a small path, drove into the grounds, and bored into a thicket. This indicated the immediate proximity of the sepulchre. Fauchelevent slowed down again, but could not slow down the hearse. Luckily, the ground was loose and wet with all the winter rains, and it stuck to the wheels, bogging the wheels down and making the going hard. He caught up with the gravedigger.
"They have such a good little Argenteuil wine," murmured Fauchelevent.
"Villager," the man resumed, "I really should not be a gravedigger. My father was a porter at the Britannée. He intended me for literature, but he had a run of bad luck. He lost money on the stock exchange. I was forced to give up the profession of author. But I am still a public letter writer."
"So you're not a gravedigger, then?"
Fauchelevent shot back, clutching at straws, however weak. "One doesn't rule out the other. I'm holding 2 jobs concurrently." Fauchelevent did not understand this last word.
"Let's go and have a drink," he said.
Here, an observation is necessary. Fauchelevent, whatever his anguish, was proposing a drink but forgot to say who was paying. Normally, Fauchelevent made the proposal and Father Metienne paid. The offer of a drink was obviously the result of the new situation created by the new gravedigger, and this offer had to be made, but the old gardener, not unintentionally, had left the proverbial hour of reckoning in the dark. When it came down to it, he, Fauchelevent, however nervous he might be, was not keen to cough up the money. The gravedigger went on with a superior smile. "You've got to eat. I agreed to take on Father Metienne's obligations. When you've almost finished school, you're a philosopher. On top of working with my hands, I have added working with my arms. I have my writer's stall in the market, in the Rue de Sèvres. You know, the Marché aux Parapluies. All the women who are cooks in the Croix Rouge turn to me. I tart up their declarations to their true loves. In the morning I write love letters. In the afternoon I dig graves. That's life, Hayseed." The hearse advanced. Fauchelevent, at the peak of anxiety, looked all around him. Great beads of sweat were running down his forehead. "Yet," the gravedigger continued, "you cannot serve two mistresses. I have to choose between the pen and the pick. The pick is ruining my hands." The hearse pulled up. The choir boy got down from the draped car, followed by the priest. One of the small front wheels was up a bit on a pile of dirt, beyond which an open grave could be seen.
"Not a bad joke," Fauchelevent repeated, aghast.
Between Four Planks. Who was in the coffin?
We know Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean had arranged himself to stay alive in there, and he was more or less still breathing. It is a funny thing how a secure conscience makes everything else secure. The whole scheme Jean Valjean had cooked up beforehand was working, and working well from the start the night before. He was counting, like Fauchelevent, on Father Metienne. He had no doubt about the end result. Never was there a more critical situation, never more complete calm. The four planks of the coffin gave off a kind of terrible peace. It was as though something of the repose of the dead had entered into Jean Valjean's tranquillity. From the depths of this bier he had been able to follow, and was following, all the phases of the formidable drama that he was playing with death. Not long after Fauchelevent had finished nailing on the top plank, Jean Valjean felt himself being carted out, then rolling along. At the decrease in jolts, he felt that they had gone from the cobblestones to hard ground, that is, that they were leaving the streets and getting onto the boulevards. At a dull thump, he guessed they were crossing the Pont d'Austerlitz. At the first stop, he had understood they were going into the cemetery. At the second stop, he said to himself, "Here's the grave." Suddenly he felt hands grabbing the coffin, then a harsh scraping against the planks. He realized that this was a rope being tied around the coffin to lower it down into the freshly dug hole. Then he had a kind of dizzy spell. The undertakers and the gravedigger had probably tipped the coffin and let it down head first. He swiftly got his bearings back, feeling himself to be horizontal again and immobile. He had just touched bottom. He felt a certain chill. A voice rose above him, icy and solemn. He heard, so slowly he could grasp them one after the other, Latin words that he could not understand, rising and falling away. "Qui dormiunt in terre pulvere, e vigilabunt. Alii in vitam aeternam, et alii in opprobrium, ut videant semper." A child's voice said, "De profundis." The grave voice started again, "Requiem aeternam dona ei domine." The child's voice responded, "Et lux perpetua luceat ei." He heard something like the gentle patter of a few drops of rain on the plank that covered him. It was probably holy water. He thought, "This will soon be over. Hang on a bit longer. The priest is going to go away. Fauchelevent will take Metienne for a drink. They'll leave me alone. Then Fauchelevent will come back alone and I'll get out of here. This will all take a good hour." The grave voice resumed, "Requiescat in pace." And the child's voice said, "Amen." Jean Valjean cocked an ear and heard something like footsteps receding. "There they go," he thought. "I'm on my own." Suddenly, he heard over his head a noise that sounded like a clap of thunder. It was a shovelful of dirt falling on the coffin. A second shovelful of dirt fell. One of the holes through which he was breathing blocked up. A third shovelful of dirt fell. Then a fourth. Some things are stronger than the strongest of men. Jean Valjean passed out. In which we find the origins of the saying, "Don't lose your pass." Here is what happened above the coffin in which Jean Valjean lay. When the hearse had driven away,
when the priest and the choir boy had climbed back into the carriage and gone. Fauchelevent, who didn't take his eyes off the gravedigger, saw him bend down and grab hold of his shovel, which was sticking straight up in the pile of dirt. So then Fauchelevent made an extreme resolution. He stood between the grave and the gravedigger, crossed his arms, and said, "I'm paying." The gravedigger looked at him in amazement and replied, "What's that, peasant?"
Fauchelevent repeated,
"I'm paying."
"What for?"
"The wine."
"What wine?"
"The Argenteuil."
"Where is this Argenteuil?"
"A bon coin."
"Leave it alone," said the gravedigger.
And he threw another shovelful of dirt on the coffin. The coffin made a hollow sound. Fauchelevent felt himself teeter and almost fell into the grave himself. In a voice in which the rattling sound of choking could be heard, he yelled,
"Come on, friend, before the bon coin closes."
The gravedigger filled his shovel with another load of dirt. Fauchelevent went on,
"I'm paying,"
and he grabbed the gravedigger's arm.
"Listen to me, friend. I'm the convent gravedigger. I'm here to help you. It's a job that can be done at night, so let's start by having a drink."
And while he continued to talk, while he clung to this desperate gambit, he had a gloomy thought. And what happens even if he does have a drink? Will he even get tipsy? "Provincial," said the gravedigger, "if you insist, I consent. We'll have a drink. After the work's done, not a moment before." And he set his shovel in motion once more. Fauchelevent held him back.
"It's Argenteuil at 6 sous a pop."
"For heaven's sake," said the gravedigger, "you're like a bell ringer. Ding dong, same thing over and over. Shove off, will you?" And he launched a second shovelful. Fauchelevent had reached the point where you no longer have a clue what you're saying.
"Oh, come on, come and have a drink," he yelled, "since I'm the one that's paying."
"When we've put the baby to bed," said the gravedigger. He chucked in the third shovelful. Then he stuck the shovel in the ground and added, "You see, it's going to be a cold night tonight, and the dead woman's going to give us a piece of her mind if we plant her here without a cover." At that moment, while he loaded his shovel, the gravedigger bent down, and the pocket of his jacket gaped wide open. Fauchelevent's wild eyes went automatically to this pocket and stayed there. The sun was not yet hidden below the horizon. There was enough light to make out something white at the bottom of this gaping pocket. The entire load of lightning that the eyes of a peasant from Picardy can hold flashed in Fauchelevent's pupils. An idea had just occurred to him. Without the gravedigger's noticing, busy as he was with his shovelful of dirt, he slipped his hand in the pocket from behind and withdrew the white thing at the bottom. The gravedigger sent the fourth shovelful into the grave. The moment he turned back to get a fifth shovelful, Fauchelevent gave him a profoundly calm look and said,
"By the way, newcomer, have you got your pass?"
The gravedigger stopped in his tracks. "What pass?"
"The sun's going down."
"Good for him. Let him put his nightcap on."
"The cemetery gate's about to shut."
"So what?"
"Have you got your pass?"
"Ah, my pass," said the gravedigger, and he fumbled in his pocket. When he'd fumbled in one pocket, he fumbled in the other. He went on to his watch pockets, explored the first, turned the second inside out. "Oh, no," he said. "I don't have my card. I must have forgotten it."
15 francs fine," said Fauchelevent.
The gravedigger turned green. Green is what pallid people turn when they go pale.
"Jesus wept," he cried. 15 francs fine." 300 sous, said Fauchelevent.
The gravedigger dropped his shovel. Fauchelevent's turn had come.
"Oh, well," said Fauchelevent, "despair not, conscript. No need to slit your wrists and put the grave to use. 15 francs is 15 francs, and besides, you can always not pay. I'm an old hand, you're new. I know the tricks of the trade, the traps, the ins and outs. Let me give you a word of friendly advice. One thing is clear, and that is that the sun's going down. It's hit the dome. The cemetery is going to close in 5 minutes."
"That's true," replied the gravedigger.
5 minutes starting from now is not enough time for you to fill up the grave. It's as deep as the devil, this hole, and get out before they shut the gates."
"You're right."
"In which case, there's the 15-franc fine."
15 francs?
"But you have time. Where do you live?"
"A stone's throw from the barrière. A quarter of an hour from here, Rue de Vaugirard, number 87.
You have time, if you run as fast as your pins will go, to get out now.
Quite right.
Once you're through the gate, you scurry home, grab your pass, come back. The cemetery gatekeeper will open up for you, and then you won't have to pay because you'll have your pass, and then you can bury your dead. Me? I'll keep an eye on her for you to make sure she doesn't run away.
I owe you my life, peasant.
Get cracking, said Fauchelevent.
The gravedigger, overcome with gratitude, shook his hand and turned on his heel and ran. When the gravedigger had disappeared through the bushes, Fauchelevent listened until his footsteps died away. Then he bent over the grave and said in a low voice, Father Madeleine. No answer. Fauchelevent gave a shudder. He rolled into the grave more than he scrambled down into it, threw himself at the head of the coffin, and cried, Are you there? Silence in the coffin. Fauchelevent could no longer breathe. He was shaking so hard. He took his cold chisel and his hammer and wrenched the top plank off. Jean Valjean's face appeared in the twilight, eyes closed, pale. Fauchelevent's hair stood on end. He shot to his feet, then fell with his back against the wall of the grave, ready to collapse on top of the coffin. He looked at Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean lay there, lifeless, ashen, and still. Fauchelevent murmured in a voice so low it was barely a breath, He's dead. He straightened himself up, crossed his arms so violently he whacked his shoulders with his clenched fists, and cried, This is how I save him. Then the poor man began to sob, carrying on a monologue, for it is a mistake to think the monologue is not a natural phenomenon. Extreme emotions often speak out loud.
It's all Father Machen's fault. Why did he have to die, the idiot? Why did he croak the very moment we weren't expecting it? He's the one who's killed Monsieur Madeleine. Father Madeleine, he's in the coffin. He's already been carted here. It's all over. But things like this just don't make any sense, do they? God almighty, he's dead. And what about the little girl? What am I to do with her? What's the fruit hawker woman going to say? How in Christ's name can a man like that die like this? When I think how he got under my cart, Father Madeleine, of course, he suffocated. I told him he would. He wouldn't listen. It's a pretty turn-up for you, indeed. He's dead. That good man, the best man there was of all the good ones God made. What about his little girl? To start with, I'm not going back there. I'm staying put. Imagine pulling a stunt like this. A lot of good it's done being two old men if all we are is two old lunatics. But to start with, how did he manage to get into the convent? That was how it all started. You're not supposed to do that sort of thing. Father Madeleine, Father Madeleine, Father Madeleine, Madeleine, Monsieur Madeleine, Monsieur le Maire, you can't hear me. How are you going to get yourself out of this one, I ask you? And he tore his hair. In the distance, a harsh grating sound could be heard. It was the cemetery gates closing. Fauchelevent leaned over Jean Valjean, and suddenly he sort of bounced up and leaped back, as far as you can leap back in a grave. Jean Valjean had his eyes open and was looking at him. To see a dead person is frightening. To see a person resurrected is almost as bad. Fauchelevent turned to stone, pale, wild-eyed, overwhelmed by all these extreme emotions, not knowing whether he was dealing with the living or the dead, looking at Jean Valjean, who was looking back at him. I almost went to sleep, said Jean Valjean, and he sat up. Fauchelevent fell on his knees.
Holy Mother of God, you gave me a fright!
Then he stood up and shouted, Thank you, Father Madeleine!
Jean Valjean had merely passed out. The open air had revived him. Joy is the backward surge of terror. Fauchelevent had almost as much work to do as Jean Valjean to recover.
So you're not dead? Oh, you've got your wits about you. I called out to you so much that you came back. When I saw your eyes closed, I said, That's it, he's suffocated. I'd have gone stark raving mad, mad enough for a straitjacket. They'd have stuck me in Bicêtre. What was I supposed to do if you had died? What about your little girl? The barrow woman would never have been able to make head or tail of it. There's the kid plonked in her arms, and then the grandfather ups and dies. What a turn-up for the books! By all the saints above, what a turn-up for the books! But you're alive. That's the best part about it.
I'm cold, said Jean Valjean. Those words brought Fauchelevent
completely back to reality and to its urgency. Both these men